Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome everybody to Mushing Radio. This is Robert Forto hosting from the mushing capital of the world, Willow, Alaska. And on our line we have our Iditarod coverage co-host calling in from Southern California, Alex Stein. How's it going?
It's going great, Robert. How are things up in Willow?
It is melting quick. We're having beautiful 50 to 60 degree days, and it is definitely springtime here in Alaska.
That sounds fantastic.
What's going on down in California?
You know, we had the warmest day of the year today so far. It was about 85 degrees here, and it was nice and overcast in the morning, and then that burned off, and it was just hot.
Very good, very good. Well, thank you very much for joining us on this Friday evening. It's always a pleasure having you on the air. We're covering our Iditarod mushers. Continuing on Mushing Radio today, we have Colleen Roberta on. Colleen, are you there?
Yep, this is Colleen.
Hi, Colleen. How are you? Thank you for joining us on Mushing Radio. If you will, can you tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into the show this evening?
Sure. I live in Kasilof, Alaska, so we're down on the Kenai Peninsula about a 3 to 4 hour drive from Willow, south towards Homer. And let's see, we have a pretty small kennel. I train about 24 dogs that could compete in races, but I do actually at the kennel have 46 dogs, so that also includes a lot of rescued dogs and different dogs like geriatrics and whatnot that just need a good place to live out their last couple years here. So we have kind of a mixed bag over here. I actually grew up on the East Coast. I grew up south of Boston and went to college in New York. Met my husband in Georgia. We both worked for the Wildlife Conservation Society, both an interest in zoology. So we've always worked with animals. And about 10 years ago, we have visited my brother who lives in Kenai, Alaska, and just fell in love with Alaska. It was just one of those weekends that's perfect, like kind of the weather like you just mentioned we've been having this week. So we're like, oh, this is beautiful. We should move there. So and then, you know, as soon as we moved here, got bit by the bug and have been kind of accumulating a gallery of dogs since.
Well, you know, that I think that's how all of us end up in Alaska. We take that first trip up here, and the next thing you know, either we're buying plane tickets or ferry tickets or U-Hauls or whatever, and here we are up here in the great state, and a lot of us are out here trying to do the mushing thing like you guys are. But I have to congratulate you on your Iditarod finish, 21st place, very respectable. We're going to get into that later on in the program, and we want to make sure that we let Alex know just to jump in any time to ask questions to Colleen, because I'm sure you have a lot on your mind as well. We spoke about you several times in our daily coverage. We did a daily show here on Mushing Radio of the Iditarod, and we spoke of you as well as just about everybody else as you guys were competing in the race, and we're definitely interested in finding out your take on the 2012 Iditarod. Alex, do you have a first question for Colleen?
Yeah, Colleen, we've all, those of us who've been following the Iditarod, have noticed you very frequently, your dogs have a very particular coats or blankets that they wear that I believe say adopt one until there are none. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about your strategy of adopting dogs and your how you incorporate dogs that you adopt and shelter dogs into your kennel.
Oh, sure. Of course, it stems from just our love of dogs and you know, we've always kind of had the philosophy and just the ethic that, you know, every dog has an inherent worth. It's not just a tool that, you know, works for us. And ours are, you know, much closer to family members in general. So it's kind of always been our ethics here at our kennel. So when it came to mushing, of course, you know, mushing itself brings a lot of dogs into the world, and we just, as we got more and more involved in the sport, you know, I didn't want to only be a part of making more dogs, having more dogs. I also wanted to be part of that solution of finding homes for them and really working with dogs to reach their potential. I think a lot of competitive mushers maybe don't have the patience to work through. I mean, you can have dogs that just certain years, they just have bad years, and it takes a lot of patience on the musher's part to go ahead and work through maybe some behaviors or some training difficulties you've had and continue to figure out what their strength is and how to capitalize on it, or come up with, you know, we do some unique things that I think a lot of other kennels maybe don't do, because what we're trying to do is keep all our dogs, give them a home for life, and have them contribute to the kennel for as long as they can in a healthy way. And so we'll do things like, you know, in the summer, a lot of dogs are just off, or maybe they go up to the glacier and do tour runs. But we actually do a significant amount of cross training. So, you know, most of my dogs swim, and they swim really well. They love it. I have some dogs that are as excited or more excited to go to the pond because they know they're going swimming than they are maybe halfway into the season when we're still hooking up and doing, you know, 30 or 40-mile training runs. And it's really funny because, you know, we'll show up to swim, and they're howling, just like you hear at the start of Iditarod or the start of a race, and they're sitting there howling. And, you know, because it's summer, we'll have windows down in the truck, and they'll have their heads out just howling when we show up to the ponds to swim and things like that. Most of our dogs know how to play fetch. And, again, and it could be part of it is, you know, I played college basketball, and so I have this other perspective of being just a human athlete and doing the cross-training year-round for college athletics. So I, you know, incorporate what I know as a human athlete, which is, you know, do cross training, train on different terrains, so you build up all sorts of ligaments and joints. And I think, you know, we tend to have less injuries from you know, the common ones you get, the wrist injuries and the shoulder injuries. We don't get a lot of those, I think, because we do so much cross training. We do that swimming, which really builds up their shoulders. You know, we do, like, sprint workouts. They all can play fetch, which is, I mean, if you watch dogs play fetch, that really builds up some different joints and things like that. So we really work on that with the dogs we have. Like I said, it's incredibly important for us that they all know that their family, they have a home for life. They won't get moved out. They're safe here at the kennel, and this is all their family. And I think mentally that keeps them stronger as a kennel. But I still feel strongly that it's important that people realize there's always dogs to adopt from the pound. I do find when I'm trying to get a dog trained up where it could be a competitive racer, when you adopt them from the pound, even if you adopt them as an adult dog instead of a puppy, you still have to, in your mind, think of them as a puppy, because they're not going to have the mature muscles. They're not going to have the development that you would have if you had a dog that you had since it was a puppy. So it's important. What we've kind of figured out is it still takes about 2 years for them to put on the muscle mass and the muscle maturity to keep up with the race team. So it's just something to keep in mind when you are looking at that. I would like to see more people that are kind of just dabbling in the sport or just, you know, want to give it a try. You know, a lot of people are quick to go out and buy dogs, and there's a lot of dogs sitting at shelters and at the pound that, given the patience and the dedication that I believe you should give if you're going to get into this sport, a lot of people, I think, could still experience some success and save a dog's life.
You know, Colleen, that's a great point that you made about them dogs, your dogs being part of the family, and they're there for life. That's the same philosophy we have at our kennel up here in Willow. I share kennel duties with another family, and we are of the same mindset as you are. My first question to that, in regards to that, is what about the bond that you build up? You know, as a musher, we'll be the first to attest that that bond is very important out there on the trail, whether it's an 8-mile sprint run or a 1,000-mile Iditarod quest. How is that bond built over the year with your dogs in comparison to somebody, and we don't want to talk down or badly about them, but somebody that has 100 to 150 dogs in their dog yard?
Yeah, all I can say to that is that, I've only experienced being on the end of someone that develops that bond. So I've had people say, well, everyone out there has a bond with their dogs, otherwise their dogs wouldn't run. And that's not true, everyone goes to work. It doesn't mean that they love their boss. They go to work because it's their job to go and get it done, because that's how they get by in life. And so that can be someone's philosophy. And for us, it's just that's just not something that really is in our blood, let alone anything that we would want to do. And so, but I can attest from my own experience that I know that bond that I have with my dogs is what has gotten us to the finish line. I know that there are great mushers and great dogs and great dog teams, but I think it would be hard for some of these great mushers to get the team that I got to Nome this year to Nome. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's because I know that the team I ran, several of the dogs on the team, some of the, like the storm that we went through from Shaktulik over to Koyuk and whatnot, that they went through it because they were doing it for me. I could look into their eyes and they could look into mine and say, okay, we'll get you through it to this next point. Or, I knew that they could do it for, and really, honestly, I think they can do it for each other too. I had spoken when I was out on the trail to a reporter, and I had just had a really tough run into Unalakleet, where one of my biggest dogs, I had to pack for 40 miles on some really, really rough trail, which, it's always rough, the run to Unalakleet. But the dog, though he's probably 70, 75 pounds, he's our baby. In fact, he's wrestling on my bed right now as we speak. but he's like our giant baby, and he's like the kennel's baby, And so, and at that point it was cold. Well, it's always cold. But I was hallucinating. I had barely any sleep that whole race, and I really just said, "Please, guys, we can't. Dunkel needs to get to the checkpoint. We got to get him fed and warm." And I just can't. I can't do it myself. And they never even stopped after I asked them, and we got going again. I know that they pulled through it, and they pulled through it for me, and for the team, and for Dunkel,
Alex, you want to respond to that?
First of all, I was just listening to that interview actually on the web this afternoon, and it's a pretty amazing interview that you did with I believe it was Kanom. I wanted to ask Colleen, you had a very, very good rookie run in 2010, where I believe you were 36th, and then this past year you had a really fantastic run and finished in 21st place. What was the difference, aside from having done it once before, what was the difference for you in the 2012 race as opposed to your 2010 race?
The difference as far as, moving up that many positions, I think really just came down to confidence in myself. It's always probably my biggest shortcoming is just my own self-confidence, and having one Iditarod and one Quest under my belt, several Copper Basins, just the confidence. Going into either the Quest or the Iditarod as a rookie, I was a rookie, but my entire team, they were also rookies. Whereas a lot of times you hear about a rookie, a rookie going, like even this year's, rookie of the year, great guy, Brent Sass. I really like him, but it's not like his team hadn't seen 1,000 miles before, or he hadn't seen 1,000 miles before, Whereas, my rookie runs, I had, you know, an entire dog team that had never seen 1,000 miles. So there's that, I don't know that they can do it, and then there's, I don't know that I can do it. So a lot of it is just the confidence of knowing that I have done it, knowing that I could do it. I know that I trained as hard as I could to do it as well as I could for the Iditarod this year. It's challenging because I do keep a full-time job, and I mean, I was just around the clock this year. And also, I just, you know, I've always had the mindset of it's important to always try your best because you don't want to have regrets. And I learned that, you know, just, you know, throughout life with different sports that I've been involved with. It's just important to always go for it, especially like when you're talking about Iditarod. I mean, the thing with Iditarod is you're not investing a week or a couple of months or just the winter. I mean, and in a sense, you know, you're investing a solid year of your life, a solid year. And honestly, you're really investing several years of money, like blood, sweat, and tears. So you don't want to go into it to fall short. And I don't mean like scratching, because, you know, you could have worked just as hard and just things don't line up. But as long as you know that you did what you could and maybe the best decision is to scratch, then that's the best decision and you can still leave it all on the court. But I've just always, you know, always wanted to do my best and do the things that I know that I have in control or that I'm in control of to get there. Because especially, I mean, we all know, especially with mushing, there's so many variables that are out of your control. And so as long as I can train and put myself in the position where I can do the best that I can do, then that's how I try to go about it.
That's a great point, Colleen. We're talking to Colleen Roberta on Mushing Radio. You can listen to us on Wednesday evenings on mushingradio.com, streaming on radiofreepalmer.org and 89.5 FM in the Matsu Valley area. If we can, Colleen, can we delve into that sports psychology just a little bit? You said that you played college basketball, and I'm sure that had a heck of a lot to do with the way that you go about planning and executing your actions, not only in the Iditarod, but other things you compete in. How much does that background in sports help you in preparing for, training for, dealing with the things like you see out there on the Iditarod Trail or the Yukon Quest?
I think it's helped me significantly on a lot of levels. Just on a level of always pushing myself. You know, when you play sports or, you know, organized sports like in college or even high school, I just remember days where we had triple sessions. We'd get up at 6 and do one workout, and then we'd have to go back to the gym, you know, between classes and have another workout, and then we'd have another workout that night after classes were over. But then you had to keep up with your books and your grades as well. And so you learn to just follow through and execute and push yourself. You also learn that it's just as important to rest yourself and take care of yourself. And that's one thing I've also taken to how I train the dogs is, you know, really reading what they need and pushing when they need to be pushed, but at the same time, knowing that you don't push hard and not rest hard, because you got to heal anything little, and really, especially if you're trying to keep a small kennel and you're trying to keep your dogs, you know, for their lives, there's a big mental aspect that you have to make sure is healthy, and it has to be healthy for the whole kennel, and so that's also really important as far as that sports psychology aspect.
Alex, do you care to respond to that?
Colleen, I was wondering, I read in your bio that your day job, if you will, is working as a youth counselor.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if any of the training that you had, that you got for that career or any of your experiences in that career have translated directly or indirectly into your mushing life?
Well, it's interesting because I do work with, kids that tend to not just struggle for one reason or another in a classical school setting, but more than that, that other people have given up on. Not all of them. I don't want to just blanket the kids I work with, but a lot of them have challenges, and the adults that maybe should have supported them in their life haven't. And absolutely, you can see that with a lot of dogs that I work with. And I think the bottom line is, I'm just the type of person that has patience. A lot of times that's all anyone needs, whether it's, a canine or, a human. Just someone that'll help them see a goal through, or help them realize goals and work to attain them, to set things realistic. I'll come to school and ask a kid, what's your goal for the day? And they're like, to be perfect. It's like, well, let's start with saying hi to your teacher. Let's make these attainable things, and then give them that positive feedback. Like, you did it, and now we're through the day and you had a great day. So in that sense, yeah, I take that to, a lot of aspects of my life. But the other good thing too is, I also can leave work at work, and on the flip side, there's some days where it's just nice to come home and step on the sled and, just kind of get away and just get into the, the rhythm of the dogs. I mean, it's just, 10 years ago, I'd never imagined that I'd love staring at the back of dogs for hours and days, and now it's not just like you're zoning out and bored at all, or for me. I mean, I know it's not for everyone, and it's because some people get real bored with it, but, for me, it's more of a rhythm, and you just become part of that rhythm.
Colleen, this is good stuff. We've talked to a lot of mushers, not only on this show, but on our other radio broadcasts. And I don't think in all of the interviews that I've ever done that we've really delved into the mind of the musher that we have today. So I have to give you some kudos there. This is great stuff. And I'm sure our listeners are just thinking, wow, I thought that you were just jumping on a set of runners and you were just pulling the hook and you're rocking and rolling. But there is truly a big part of this whole mental aspect to not only mushing, but the daily care of a kennel of dogs, whether it be a recreational team or Iditarod team. And as many people will attest, the weakest link on a team is always the musher. And I think you're addressing that as best as you can, don't you think?
I'd like to hope so. I'm always working, and that's probably when you asked one of the differences that I've had between, my rookie run versus this run, self-confidence. But part of that is also realizing that when I'm falling emotionally or mentally or whatever, not to bring the dogs down with me. And that's probably the biggest thing I've learned over the last couple of years is, no matter what happens, I have got to keep these kids, these dogs built up so that they want to continue, because, they can immediately sense it. I mean, they can smell any emotion, on you. And they're constantly looking for that reinforcement. And I just always try and make it a positive reinforcement for them as best I can. I mean, even when I am, down. Because you do, I've thought, mushing really brings out the bipolar in all of us, I think. So it's because it's just a constant run of ups and downs. And another thing that kind of keeps, I think, people going, and what I tell all rookies is, no matter what happens out there, everyone has gone through it. You lose your team, everyone's gone through it. You just have the worst run you think you've ever had. You get to the checkpoint and everyone else is like, oh, my gosh, that's the worst run I've ever had. And yet at the same time, you have some of the most amazing highs and some of the most amazing views and the most amazing moments of your life. There's more times when I'm out there and I'm like, I wish there was some sort of something that could get a picture of this moment so I could capture it and share it with, you know, my loved ones, because I just want them to understand. And it's something I can't put into words, so I'd just love to capture this moment so everyone could share it, you know?
That's exactly why a lot of us do this. You know, we're on the back of those runners for all those hours, like you said, looking at dogs' butts for hundreds of miles down the trail. But there is that one moment that we capture there on, and it happens just about on each run, whether it's a training run or you know, a long distance race. There's that one moment that you think, wow, this is why I do this, and this is why I love it. I think that, at least that's why I do it. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. With racing, I think the camaraderie aspect comes with that, where everyone's just like, man, this is it. This is why we do it. I remember as a rookie, it was just a rough race, you know. 1,000 miles is tough, no matter how wonderful the trail is or wonderful the weather is or whatever. It's just tough, especially if you don't have a lot of experience and a lot of experienced dogs. And I remember this one day, and it was actually, interesting enough, the run to Unalakleet. And it was a long, tough run because the trail just, you know, the snow's real sugary and the trail's just real mogul-y. And Matt Hayashida passed me, and he just had the biggest grin on, and he goes, isn't this wonderful? And it's like, and I just like was like, you know, he's right. It is. This is actually amazing. And it, you know, and for me at the moment, it was what I needed to hear at that moment. But then also, I just try and remember that moment, and find more of those moments, you know, every day that I can. It's just, you know, again, it's and you kind of need to if you're gonna support 40 or more dogs, you know.
Right. Alex, do you have go ahead, Alex.
Sorry, I was just going to say that's just absolutely fantastic. That's really, really wonderful stuff. I know that a lot of us who were watching the race or watching the GPS of the race this year noticed that you seem to be running a lot with Lance Mackey, especially, I believe, on the Yukon River portion of the race. What was it like to be running so close or running with Lance for all that time?
Honestly, the best thing that could have happened to me, for sure. And I even said it, I think, at the finishing banquet, that I know it wasn't the run he ever wanted to have, but gosh, and it'll be one that he'll want to forget soon, but for me it'll be one I'll remember my whole life. And he actually used to be our next-door neighbor. So I will say, as far as champions, I've always respected Lance. We come from, you know, different kennel management ethics, but I will always stand up for him. I think he treats everyone completely respectfully, no matter where he is in the standings. Even when he's at the top of his game and winning everything, he has always taken the time to even stop his dog team and say, hey, how's it going? You know, always been completely... not just polite, but completely pleasant to be around. And on top of it, very willing to come forth in a friendly way with helpful information. He's, you know, I was having trouble with just nutrition, and he just was like, well, at this point in the race, you should be feeding this amount of fat, and you really want to bump it up because of the calorie burn. It's not just about calories at this point. It's about the type of calories. Here's the routine that I use. He was just very forthcoming with that sort of stuff. And I know he's not giving me his winning secrets, but at the same time, he was more than just a contender and more than just just another musher out there. I mean, he was like a friend out there, and I've always respected him, but I actually just even more so appreciated moving that close to him. And he makes it fun. He's someone that no matter how your day went, you can just enjoy being in the room with him because he's just, you know, and I know that he has some rough things going on in his life, and yet he's still one of the most positive people you can be around. And he just exudes it, and it's you can't not smile around him. So It's just, it was, for me, it was great. Like I said, it was so educational, but also very motivating to move that close to him. So I really appreciate him and who he is and what he's done for the sport.
Colleen and Alex, the show will go off of the air right now, but it will still be streaming and recording. So if you don't mind, if we can just go on for, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 more minutes if we could. Is that okay, Colleen?
Yeah, that's fine.
And Alex, you're okay with that?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. That's good stuff with, you know, with the information you shared about Lance. You know, that's what a lot of mushing fans want to hear. You know, they sit at their computers and they're watching on the Insider on Facebook or the GPSs or whatever, and they're just following dots down the trail. But that's the stuff that they want to hear, and I don't think a lot of that is shared if they aren't there in person, if they don't go to the banquets, if, you know, if they aren't in Alaska. You know, a lot of folks are huge fans, and they're huge fans sitting in their cubicles at work every day. So my question to you, Colleen, is what is the best way for a fan here in 2012, 2013 to follow races like the Iditarod and the Yukon Quest if they, you know, really want to get into the race as much and as best they can?
Ooh, that's a horrible question for me. I can't even figure out how to program a cell phone, so I'm not on Facebook. My understanding is Facebook's actually a great tool to be able to follow some of those things, because usually people post, I guess, relatively instantly. Even different races, you know, make these Facebook sites and different websites. So I'm probably the last person, I'm like the only person I know who doesn't have a cell phone, let alone a smartphone. We don't have high speed where we live, so that's why it's so hard for me to coordinate anything by email, because I can only have email every couple of days when I'm in town or whatever, so, or at work. But of course, you know, my work blocks most websites, so I'm so sorry. I'm no help at all with that one.
Hey, that's okay. So let me rephrase the question a little bit. How do you keep your fans up to date, whether it's your friends and family or just folks that are following you, possibly sponsors or whoever is you know, rooting for Colleen's team? How do you keep those guys up to date?
You know, I will say my husband does an amazing job with that. He keeps a blog. We have a website, and he keeps a blog, and he's actually very actively on the blog. And when I'm racing, I believe he posts pretty regularly. When I have a chance to call on Iditarod, I think there's a half a dozen or so places where there is a landline, so you can, you know, I carry a calling card and I can call when I get to those checkpoints and just let him know how different dogs are doing. And then throughout the race, he'll make different posts based on if I've called or not, or what he's seeing and his interpretation, whether it's right or not. At least it's his interpretation of who's doing what. And then he'll follow if there's any, you know, media coverage, and he can see the dogs or, you know, see me or whatever, and he'll kind of talk about who he's seen. And so probably, you know, and I don't really know how many mushers have a website and a blog. I know quite a few do blog about, you know, how things are going. I know Iditarod itself in our, Musher meeting talked about ways basically to keep fans more in the moment of the race. And with this new technology coming out, is there something more we can do while we're out on the trail so fans can really be, you know, not just following the race, but in a sense of part of the race? You know, are we able to, you know, make posts at checkpoints so more, or and ideally, you know, take pictures or video clips at checkpoints so we can talk about, you know, in the moment what happened? And because, you know, it's always, you know, I can talk about what happened, you know, but at this point it's been, what, you know, 5 weeks or something, you know. And whereas if I could have posted, you know, right when I got to Koyuk, how it was going through that windstorm or something like that, you know, it certainly would bring more people into that moment and what it was like out there and things like that. So I do think they're looking at it, and it sounds like, you know, in this day and age, there is a lot of potential for people to follow it better. But other than that, you know, I always welcome, you know, people will, you know, either write our email on the blog or send us letters. And, you know, I try and get back to anyone that sends a letter. You know, of course, after Iditarod, we get hundreds of letters from kids at schools and stuff. So I try and write back to every single one of them. And if I miss one, it's honestly just because at this point our house looks like a used checkpoint. So there's just piles of stuff everywhere. We're trying to wash stuff and put it away for summer. But, you know, it's a never-ending cycle of chores.
It does never end. It's a 24/7, 365-a-day job, that's for sure. We're down there painting doghouses and that sort of thing as we speak ourselves. I have one final question, and I'm going to hold off until Alex asks his, if you don't mind. Alex, what is the last question for Colleen?
Sure. Colleen, I just wanted to, from a fan's perspective, I wanted to say that you, as one of the mushers who is, I think, really in this sport for the love of it and for all of the right reasons, and as someone who is holding down a full-time job and yet still finding time to train your dogs, and as well as your strategy and your philosophy for dog care and dog rescue, you are one of the more inspirational mushers from a fan's point of view, and I just want to acknowledge that and thank you for everything you do, and also plug your website, which I don't think you did, or at least not by name, which I believe is rogueskennel.com. But I was interested in knowing what you thought, where you are planning on moving in terms of racing and in terms of planning for your next races, what you have in store and what steps you need to take to realize those goals.
Well, I appreciate the compliment, by the way. Thank you very much, because it's hard not to get down on yourself, you know. So, you know, I do. I really appreciate your compliment.
I'll just compliment you more then. I also want to say that, you know, there's a lot of coverage, and we've talked about this on our daily Iditarod shows a lot. There's a lot of coverage about the, you know, 5 or 10 mushers that everybody knows who are always at the very front of the pack. And from a fan's perspective, the much more interesting stories always seem to be the middle and the back of the pack mushers. And so in finding a way to, you know, to keep making the sport more accessible and more interesting to fans, those are the stories that I think really are going to do it. The people at the front are always interesting, and the race strategy at the front is always great, but we just absolutely adore and love the stories of the people who are not going to win the race, or at least not this year.
Yeah, I agree. There's always a lot going on there, and yeah. Again, thank you. Hopefully in time, more of the middle coverage will get out, because it's like you said too. It's very dynamic and very interesting, because a lot of people kind of moving closer to where I may move is, you know, we do have either a different kennel management style or different things going on with, you know, different, just a lot of different story angles that could be covered. So, yeah, hopefully interest there will grow and eventually coverage and support. So who knows? But, again, thank you for your compliment. As far as the future, you know, my husband and I are always joking, because my brother will call and, you know, ask if I can babysit the kids, you know, 2 weeks out, and I'm like, you got to ask me the day before. That's kind of how, like I said, we haven't even finished putting everything away, and honestly, we're ahead of schedule, I think, because we did Iditarod, and we were like, yeah, let's just put everything away. We've, you know, started having these really warm days, and the snows, there's some snow, but it's, you know, really lost its integrity, so it's just not fun for the dogs to run on. They're much more into just free running through the puddles and things now at this point. But so as far as what the future holds, I do think, you know, it's hard to say. I don't want to say I'm definitely not doing one race or another this coming season. But I think with the smaller kennel and the style that we have, where the dogs stay here for life, I don't want to commit to a 1,000-mile race each year because I do think that's hard to do on the same dogs year after year. On the one hand, they know it, and once a dog knows a trail, they know that trail, which is it's pretty impressive, really. But at the same time, I think it's important for them to have, you know, really fun seasons that aren't so serious. As much as they love running, you know, the Iditarod takes it out of them, and I don't think just because it's 1,000 miles, but also it's in March. And, I mean, by the end of the race, you know, there's so much daylight, and it's just so challenging for them anyway. And it makes the season so long because, you know, we're literally training in June. So it really stretches that season out, whereas most of the mid-distance races wrap up in really January, and there might be a couple in February. And so the dogs just stay really peppy in those cold months and the dark months. You can just tell, like, they're really enjoying it. And that's like last year we had a much shorter season, you know, and didn't do a 1,000-mile race last year. And I think that paid off this year. With a small kennel, we always have to be so careful of burnout. And I think our decisions are, you know, our decisions each year are we take into consideration a number of years and not just that season. So, you know, I don't know, and who knows what kind of winter we'll have. We had a great training year this year as far as snowfall. In fact, I was ready to just say, oh, I don't want to see any more snow. We could have rain next year. I probably shouldn't have said that out loud. I'll go knock on wood right now. But you never know what's coming coming down the road. So I'm very enthusiastic about what our kennel's accomplished. I'm so proud of them. I didn't even really get to talk about any individual dog stories, but I have some amazing dog stories and their individual accomplishments as what they've overcome in their own lives. So I'm just so thrilled with where we've gone with as a team and with our kennel and all that. I'm sorry, I can't really say much more than that. I hope to have some more great races, and I don't know what they'll be, but there'll be something.
You know, Colleen, that was my final question, is what does the future hold? So I think you answered that, but I do want to let you know that we are a weekly show, so if something special happens, definitely we'll have you back on. And like Alex said, the stories for those middle-of-the-pack guys and gals are what we love to talk about. I think in all of our Iditarod coverage this year, we spent more time talking about you guys than we talked about really anybody in the front. We talked about, you know, who was in first through 10th at the beginning of the show. Then we delved into a story each evening about some of you guys that are doing what you're doing. You know, you're out there doing what you love. You're doing it because it just feels right, and I think that's important. So I do want to appreciate. I do want to thank you for being on the show, and we definitely appreciate it here on Mushing Radio. Any last thing you want to mention before we close? Like I said, this is recording, but anybody that downloads it in the future will definitely hear the entire show. So if you have anything else you want to mention, go for it.
Oh, gosh. I never think of anything witty and wonderful to say when I'm when I should have something that I just go to say. Just, you know, again, I do think with dedication and willing to hurt, you know, to put in the work, that you know, you can make good things happen in a good way. And I hope more people will you know, try and adopt that philosophy of, you know, seeing an inherent worth in every creature, and really finding out how to help them all reach their potential, and then as a team, you know, making accomplishments that mean the most to that kennel. And certainly I think we did that this year with really really preserving a high ethical standard, and yet, you know, having a competitive run, and so I'm definitely proud of that, and I'm proud of the dogs and all of the friends and family that helped us do that. And beyond that, I guess, you know, people can track our blog and hopefully learn a little bit more about again some of the individual stories we have, because we do have some great dogs that have had some rough beginnings and otherwise, you know, just fun antics to learn about and hear about, and you know, the trials and tribulations of living with so many dogs, both in and out of the house. So,
And that's rogueskennel.com?
Yeah, rogueskennel.com. And,
RogesKennel.com. So, guys, make sure you check out Colleen's website. As she says, she tries to update it as best she can, but she's living the musher's lifestyle down there without the high speed internet and the iPhones and the whole nine yards. So, we definitely understand where you're coming from for sure. Alex, anything you want to say in closing before we go?
Colleen, I just again want to thank you for coming on and sharing this time with us and your kennel philosophy and all of that. It's been really a fantastic conversation, and I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Colleen. We'll definitely pass the links and things over to you via email and check them out and listen to it. Tell your friends, put it on your blog, whatever you want to do, because this is some good stuff. Again, we've talked to a heck of a lot of mushers, but I don't think we've ever really got into it like we did this evening. So I do appreciate it very much and taking the time to spend on a Friday evening with us. Thank you very much.
Great. Yeah, no problem. Anytime again, you know, if anything particular comes up and you need a panel, feel free to get in touch again. And I had a good time. It went by quick. I was nervous.
Hey, don't worry about it, for sure. Thank you very much. So on behalf of our guests today, Colleen Roberta and Alex Stein, this is Robert Forto for Mushing Radio. We will see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Thank you.